prison island. And good things come to those who wait. But the things I hear are there just to remind me. Every dog will have his day. The spirits, they intoxicate.
Everybody, this is DJ May, and welcome to The Seed here on radio.dominican.edu. It's a beautiful autumn day, October 28th, 2013. During this month of October, you probably noticed the pumpkin patches, the candy, and an array of costumes, and just about every scary movie on TV. And you might even be more interested than usual in the witches, the goblins, and the dead. So, my little pumpkins, in light of this season, I'm going to escort you through a creepy journey that will inform you on the history of All Hallows Eve, the witches, the vampires, and the ghouls who characterize this season. I'll also be ending the show with a look into some rare humans of this earth. Humans who live life like they're dead, figuratively and literally. The spirit of Halloween starts right now here on The Seed. Halloween has been a commercial holiday here in America for quite some time, but the original holiday was one that marked the final harvest of the year. It actually had some meaning to it. It originated in what is now considered Ireland, Scotland, the UK, and northern France, and it was about 2,000 years ago. It was pagan Celtic tradition. People say Celtic and some people say Celtic. I'm going to say Celtic. Both are okay. I learned. And anyways, this tradition was called Samhain. Not only did it mark the final harvest, but it also marked the final day of the year, with the new year starting on November 1st in Celtic tradition. And this new year day, November 1st, signified the end of summer and the beginning of darker, colder days, which at that time meant a lot of death, because it was the end of harvest, so food wasn't going to be as plentiful, for sure, and it was super cold. And they didn't have the medicine that we obviously have today, or the heat. And it was dark a lot of the time. The sun only came up after 8 a.m. and it went dark at around 4 p.m. So it was dark a lot of the time, for sure. Anyway, on October 31st, the day before their new year, the Celts believed that the boundary between the living and the dead was most faint, and the spirits could easily come and kind of cross over to our world and cause any trouble to the crops if they wanted. It is also said that the Druids, who were the Celtic priests, needed the spirits to make predictions about the future. And so this Samhain festival sort of celebrated the spirits and deities and encouraged them to come over and enjoy the sacrifices that were offered at the Samhain festival. Huge bonfires were lit at the festival, and crops and animals were burned in the bonfires. And those were the offerings to the deities. During the Samhain, the Celts wore costumes which aren't at all like the costumes we wear today. And they wore masks, but they also wore animal heads and animal skin. On this day, when it was believed that ghosts came back, to the earthly world, people thought that they would encounter ghosts if they left their homes on this night. So to avoid being recognized by the ghosts, they wore these masks as costumes. And basically it was to make sure that the ghosts would think of them as fellow spirits, not as people. Before this, though, Celts wore animal heads and skins during the festival, supposedly to scare off any bad spirits. On this night, they also left food at their doors to appease the ghosts and prevent them from attempting to enter their homes. Some historians claim that the Roman Empire was partly responsible for some additional traditions that Halloween encompasses. The Romans added another day of celebration in the month of October called Feralia. And Feralia was a day when the Romans paid honor to the dead. And they acknowledged Samhain for what it was, but they added the honoring of Pomona, who was the Roman goddess of fruit and trees, into the celebration for October 31st. And Pomona was symbolized by the apple. And some folks would say that this is the reason why we bob for apples at Halloween parties sometimes, that's how that tradition came to be, was because of Pomona, the goddess of fruits. Then we fast forward about 400 years to 609 AD, and notice the spread of Christianity through the Celtic lands. It's funny because the Catholic feast of All Martyrs' Day was originally on May 13th, but Pope Gregory III decided to not only change the day of the feast to November 1st, but also to expand the feast into a festival. And today this is what we call All Saints' Day, and it's kind of like Samhain. Then, in 1000 AD, the church made November 2nd All Souls Day, which is a commemoration of those who have died and are now in purgatory. So, a lot of people would celebrate this day if somebody had recently passed within a year or so, because they were believed to have been in the state of purgatory, and they needed prayers to move upward. A lot of people believe that the church was trying to replace the Celtic tradition with something similar, but yes, they were trying to replace it. On All Souls Day back then, folks made huge bonfires just like at the Samhain, and they added parades, and they used costumes as well. And the costumes weren't animal heads and skins, though. They were costumes that looked like saints or angels and devils. And the All Saints Day was also called All Hallows or All Hallow Mass, which is from the Middle English word All Hallow Mass, which means All Saints Day. And the night before it, October 31st, was called All Hallows Eve. And the slang for this was All Hallow Evening. It was originally All Hallows Evening, which changed to All Hallows Even. And then they added an apostrophe for even. And then it eventually turned into Halloween. In America, the celebration of Halloween was limited to Maryland and the southern colonies because of the Protestant belief systems that were in place in colonial New England. Nonetheless, the celebration for the harvest was still alive and even began to morph as the customs of different European ethnic groups and American Indians meshed together. The result was a unique version of Halloween that included a public event where neighbors would gather together and dance and sing and share stories about the dead and tell each other's fortunes. Colonial Halloween festivities also featured mischief making of all kinds. They didn't really go into detail about that. Still, though, Halloween wasn't celebrated everywhere in the country. But in the 1850s, when a whole new wave of immigrants came to America, including millions of Irish folks who had fled from the Ireland potato famine in 1846, the tradition did start to extend all over. Because of the and this is when the whole trick-or-treat came about. People would begin to go to house to house asking for food or money. It is said that this trick-or-treating aspect of Halloween came from England when the poor would go door to door on Halloween and would promise to pray for any dead relatives of the people in each house in exchange for something called a soul cake. The distribution of these soul cakes was encouraged by the church as a way to replace the ancient practice of leaving food and wine for the roaming spirits. Somehow, Halloween had also been a day when young women believed that they could divine the name or appearance of their future husband by doing tricks with yarn and apples or mirrors, which I thought was extremely interesting. I never heard anything like that before. This ritual is found in 18th century Ireland and Scotland. There's also a tale that said if a young woman ate a sugary concoction made out of walnuts, hazelnuts and nutmeg before bed on Halloween night, she would dream, or she would be able to dream about her husband. Young women also threw apple peels over their shoulders, hoping that the peels would fall on the floor in the shape of their future husband's initials, which, like, go figure, huh? And this article that I read was taken from an article from the History Channel. So, do with that what you will. At some Halloween parties, the first guest to successfully bob for apples would be the first down the aisle, supposedly. This reminds me of when at weddings the bride throws the garter over. Oh no, she throws the bouquet over her shoulder and someone's supposed to catch it. The man is supposed to throw the garter over his shoulder, and the first person to catch that would be married first. So this is kind of related to that. Of course, whether asking for romantic advice or trying to avoid 7 years of bad luck, each one of these Halloween superstitions relies on the spirits, the presence of the spirits. So we could see that Halloween was based on ritual, superstition, and communication with the spirits that were able to walk the earth on this day, because as the Celts said, the line that separated them from the living was blurred on this day. In the late 1850s, though, there was the intention to make Halloween less ghost-like and witch-like, and more about community and neighbors and neighborhood get-togethers. So the original reason for Halloween became sort of hidden, and having a party for the sake of having a party is what people began to think of Halloween as. Except for, you know, some other cultures who looks at, you know, Dia de los Muertos and those other kinds of traditions. But here in America, it did become kind of hidden, and people are very concerned about, you know, their costume and what party they're going to go to. And anyways, Halloween lost most of its superstitious and religious overtones by the beginning of the 20th century. And by the 1920s and 30s, Halloween had become a community-centered holiday with parades and townwide parties. Despite the best efforts of schools and communities, vandalism was an issue. And the article says that because vandalism was an issue, Halloween became centered around a holiday for kids. And it goes on to say that the numbers of young children during the baby boom caused parties to not happen in town civic centers, but it traveled to it changed into or morphed into celebrating it at home in the classrooms where the children could be more easily accommodated. Anyways, oops. Between 1920 and 1950, the centuries-old practice of trick-or-treating was also revived. Carving pumpkins, by the way, could also be traced back to the Celtic Samhain Festival, and there, folks carved jack-o'-lanterns out of turnips and gourds, and they were set on the porches and the windows to welcome deceased loved ones, but also to act as protection against harsh spirits. And to light up the jack-o'-lantern, they didn't use a candle, they used a lump of coal, or what is called ember. There's also a legend about the jack-o'-lantern from Irish folklore that tells us about how the jack-o'-lantern was used as a light for the lost soul of Jack, who was a notorious trickster, they said. Apparently, Jack was stuck between worlds, and it said that he tricked the devil into a trunk of a tree, and by carving an image of a cross in the tree's trunk, he trapped the devil there. And because he did this prank, the legend says he couldn't go to heaven. But the devil didn't want him either, apparently, in hell, so he was a lost soul trapped between worlds. And then it says that the devil gave him ember to light his way through the darkness. How nice of the devil. Anyways, when the Irish came to America, they actually found the native pumpkin to be larger and easier to carve, so it replaced the turnips and gourds. I feel like the tradition of Halloween has died down a bit. I mean, from a money perspective, it definitely hasn't died down. In fact, the revenue that Halloween added to gross domestic product in 2012 was more than $10 billion, and that was its biggest year yet. But for whatever reason, the ideology of Halloween is completely lost in today's society. Most of the people you see these days use Halloween as an excuse to wear the most skimpy, bimbo-ish piece of vinyl out there, in my point of view. It's the only night of the year where it's acceptable to stagger down Lombard Street carrying a blow-up doll while your friend is trying to walk in her 4-inch heels because she decided to dress up as a sexy wench. I just saw this last weekend, so I'm not lying. Many of us use Halloween also as an excuse to eat a bunch of chocolate and drink excessively. And that is not what the true meaning of Halloween is. But God bless the poor girl who actually walks into a party dressed up like an ugly witch or a dead prom queen. That's how far away Halloween has gotten from its true meaning. You can't even dress up as an ugly person anymore, or a scary person. It's really weird. I suppose the older you get, the less sexy you tend to be on Halloween, but even then, the true meaning is still not quite recognized unless you search for it. But here on The Seed at radio.dominican.edu, you've heard the true origin of Halloween, and I hope that you take it with you when celebrating this year's Halloween night on Thursday. Coming up after a short break, we'll explore the world of witches. Ha ha ha! Don't miss it here on The Seed with me, DJ May, on radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand. Wrap you in his arms, tell you that you've been a good boy. He'll rekindle all the dreams that took you a lifetime to destroy. He'll reach deep into the hole, heal your shrinking soul, but there won't be a single thing that you can do. He's a god, he's a man, he's a ghost, he's a guru. They're whispering his name through this disappearing land, but hidden in his coat is a red right hand. It don't know no money, get you some. You don't have no car, get you one. You don't have no self-respect, you feel like an insect. Well, don't you worry, buddy, 'cause here he comes through the ghettos and the barrio and the barry and the slum. His shadow is cast wherever he stands, stacks of green paper in his red right hand. Oh,
of my pride. And this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's such a drag to be on your own. My woman left and she didn't say why.
Hey, this is DJ May, your host on The Seed, and you're listening to The Seed at radio.dominican.edu. And we've been discussing everything about Halloween since it's coming up. Now that you're a little more
knowledgeable about the origins and the superstitions and rituals involved in the celebration of Halloween, let's take a look at the witches who we associate with Halloween the most, I think. When you think of witch, it's easy to think of that Wicked Witch of the North and Wizard of Oz with her like hooked nose and her green skin and pointy hat and broom that she's flying on. And the big wart, also. Can't forget the wart. And you might also think of the witch stirring up a potion that's brewing inside of a huge cauldron in some dark wooden house with candles lit and her little black cat next to her. But where did this image of a witch really come from? Because really? Witches didn't look like this. Thousands of years ago, when you became ill or sick, it was likely that you wouldn't survive because they didn't have the medicine that they have now. Still, though, during those days, there were some people, mostly women, who learned the value of healing herbs and remedies. And a lot of people were helped and treated by these homemade remedies made by these women. And one might call them, you know, a natural doctor. We certainly have those nowadays. We have homeopathic doctors. And then there was the, you know, medicine men and things like that. So this wasn't outlandish. But when Christianity came and spread across Europe, a lot of clergymen from the church felt upset by the existence of these powerful women who could heal others naturally with plants. And as far as the church was concerned, all of the healing should be done strictly through the men in the church. There were also people that felt like if a person was sick or ill, that it was God's way of punishing them, and they were supposed to be suffering. And so that was somehow put on the witches or the women who were natural healers. That was put on them as well. Like, how could you, you know, do that? Over time, these healers were being accused of heresy and even devil worship. And things got really, really bad, actually. A lot of them hid themselves They lived quiet lives in like peasant villages. And yeah, they had to stay quiet and kind of, you know, remain under the radar. The word witch actually is derived from the word Wicca. And the word Wicca means wise one, which I thought was interesting. And even though they were considered wise, they were also to be considered evil by the church, of course. And automatically the church said, if you're a witch, you are doing black magic. Not good magic, but black magic or bad magic. Because black is always associated with dark and bad for some reason. The witches were accused of awful things. And it's obvious to me that these men feared the strength and intelligence that these women possessed. By the late 1400s, those accused of practicing any form of witchcraft were tried quickly, and they were pretty much always accused of heresy. And they were executed publicly as punishment. And as the years went on, the finger pointing became more and more common, and the situation had soon reached epic proportions. Between the 15th and 18th century, it is said that there were something like 50,000 executions of women. But I read somewhere that the influential feminist Mary Daly said that the actual number of deaths reached the millions, And this number from Mary Daly was actually picked up from a 19th century American feminist, Matilda Gage. And pagans would refer to the time between the 15th and 18th century as the burning times, because it was in this period when witch hunts occurred on a daily basis. There is evidence of these hunts in all parts of Europe and North America. There's also evidence that this occurred as early as 12th century in Russia. And the evidence shows that all the women of many villages were taken from their homes and executed. And in one village, Lagendorf, Switzerland, all but two women of a small village were accused of witchcraft and executed. And the problem here, which still continues to this day, but it's kind of subsided and it's getting better. But the problem here is that the female and the view of women at that time was, people believed women to be evil, inherently evil and sexual. And that was associated with the devil. There were strong ties between the idea of witchcraft and sexuality. And if a woman did not exhibit purity and innocence, if in any way, like even if she gave some sort of weird look, or if she was a little more exotic than normal, or something just made you think, something just made a man think that she was not pure or innocent, she could be tried as a witch. No joke. The book Malleus Maleficarum. Oh, and I think Maleficent in the movie Sleeping Beauty is taken from this. Maleficarum, yes. Which means the hammer of the witches, became the guidebook for prosecuting witches in Europe in the 16th and 17th centuries. And in this book, the sexual nature of witchcraft is emphasized. The book also explains why women were more likely to become witches, and it gave directions on how to try a witch. The truth of the matter, though, was that very few of these women were actually practicing witchcraft. Most of them were just common folk who didn't practice Christianity. Maybe that was the real problem, but they were just kind of saying, oh, you are a witch. You look like a witch. You are friends with the devil. You must be tried and executed. I wouldn't be surprised. Most of these poor women were hung, and some were crushed by stone, and some were drowned. Of course, some were burned at the stake. Most of the Salem witch trials involved women being burned alive while tied to a stake. It is legend that the Salem witch trials began because a man named Samuel Paris, his daughter and cousin, came down with an illness that caused their bodies to kind of flail uncontrollably. And that is what we would refer to as a seizure. But back then, they didn't know what it was. So the doctor, because he didn't know what it was, decided that since they couldn't determine what was wrong, the girls were bewitched. And from there, accusations started flying, and a lot of people were ordered to trial. They were imprisoned, and a lot were eventually executed. Well, not a lot. I mean, 200, but still, that's just so much, so many people who died for no good reason. Witches were also said to have been present during the Samhain festival that we talked about earlier. Oh, and as for the brooms, it is said that witches did carry broomsticks, but it was not for flying. It was to sweep or cleanse the area or room before a healing ritual was to take place. So they did carry brooms, but it was simply to clean out the area of any dust and dirt to perform a ritual, a healing ritual. There are many superstitions and myths regarding the black cats that always accompanied witches. Many legends say that the black cats were spirits of witches, just recreated in animal form. Other stories profess that black cats were helpers of the witches. And yeah, they're like the sidekicks, you know, they're always there when the witches are there. But that's like man's best friend, the dog, you know? These are just myths, folks. They could have some validity to them, but they are myths. And what about the pointy black hat? Well, experts aren't exactly sure why pointed lids became associated with witches, but in the early 1700s, children's books in England began changing the image of a witch from a witch used to be depicted as nude and long-haired and just very naked, kind of. And Western European artists began to change it for some unknown reason to spiked, you know, like just very edgy and dark and cloaked. And I don't know, I decided to look up, because I was thinking about witch costumes and stuff. I looked up the top Halloween costumes for the year 2013. Google actually released the top Halloween costume searches of the year. And maybe I will share those with you right now. So the number one most popular search, Halloween costume search, was a minion. And the minion is from Despicable Me. It's that little yellow character with the blue outfit on, and it has like one eyeball. And it's really cute. And they have it for dogs and adults and children. And that is the number one trending costume of the year. How cute. The second costume, second most popular costume, is the jumpsuit. I haven't seen Breaking Bad, but they say that the sinister jumpsuit that's in Breaking Bad is the second highest search. It was three times higher this year compared to last. The third most popular, Halloween search, costume search, is the fox, like a brown fox. The Google links the trend. They're trying to figure out why a fox would be the third most popular Halloween costume search. And apparently, there's a YouTube video called The Fox, which broke into the Billboard Hot 100 list. And so they're, and that actually has generated more than 140 million views. So Google is linking that as the reason, because the fox, I mean, that just sounds so random. Anyways, so the Duck Dynasty is number four. Searches for this costume are higher in Texas and three times higher this year than last overall. How do they come up with these numbers anyways? Jeez. Google knows a lot. Miley Cyrus, of course, made the list. And she's number five for the most searched costume. Number six, a Minecraft cube. That's pretty cool. The online building game about breaking and placing blocks obviously has people interested, and it looks pretty unique, but not if, you know, everybody's going to wear one. Anyways, number seven is that lady from that popular HBO series Game of Thrones. Her name is Daenerys. I don't know. I don't watch it. Oops. But yeah, she looks like a princess or something, and she's got, you know, flowing blonde hair. She's very pretty. But yes, that's number seven costume. And the number eight costume is Batman. And people are linking this to the new Batman that's coming up with Ben Affleck. And the searches for this Batman costume are up 36% versus last year. I remember my father was Batman when I was really little. I really loved it. My mom was a cat. Number nine, the Gatsby dress. And the states who are especially eager to get this outfit are California and New York. Pretty cool. Number 10 is the Daft Punk costume. Yahoo News says that fans of the band want to, quote, get lucky through imitation. And the search for this costume is at its highest level after following their summer's mega hit. Okay, let's go to a little break, but when we come back, more things Halloween here on The Seed, only on radio.dominican.edu.
Strange noises coming from a house on the hill. So I crept up to the window and looked over the sill. My heart almost stopped, I nearly died of fright. By the dim candlelight I saw the strangest sight. There was Frankenstein and Dracula and Wolfman too, dancing with some zombies, what a ghastly crew. Viola the vampire was doing the bop, and everything was rocking at the monster's pop. The bats were flying and the moon was full. The crazy witch doctor was dancing with a ghoul. The organ was playing, but no one was there. And the headless horseman was combing his hair. There was Frankenstein and Dracula and Wolfman too, dancing with some zombies, what a ghastly crew. Viola the vampire was doing the pop, and everything was rocking at the monster's hop. Up on the hill, the night I saw the monsters dancing, ooh, what a thrill. The wind did howl, the night was black, I nearly lost my mind, I'm never ever going back. There was Frankenstein and Dracula and Wolfman too, dancing with some zombies, what a ghastly crew. Viola the vampire was doing the bop, and everything was rocking at the monster's hop.
Okay, we are back, and I'm your host, DJ May, here at The Seed on radio.dominican.edu, and we've been talking a lot about Halloween, and we've been talking about the witches and the origin of Halloween, but what about one of the oldest and most prevalent creatures of world mythology, the vampire? The origin of vampires remained a mystery for a long time, but the origin is found in the scriptures of Delphi. And the Scriptures of Delphi is one of those finds in the city of Delphi, and it's said to have been written by the Oracle of Delphi. Delphi. Apparently, in these scriptures, there is a section that is entitled Vampire Bible. And the term Bible is used loosely, as it is not a religious text. But the scripture tells the story of a man named Ambrosio. Sounds like ambrosia. Who was subjected to a number of curses and blessings, but mostly curses. And it's said that the Greek gods imposed these curses on him. And it said that the gods ended up transforming him as a young man into history's first vampire. And I'm going to read a little segment of the story that was found on LifeScience.com, by the way. It began with the sun god Apollo, who, in a fit of rage, cursed Ambrosio so that his skin would burn if it ever touched sunlight again. And naturally, Ambrosio goes to hide somewhere away from the sun, and he ends up going to the caves where he gambles his soul away to Hades, who is the god of the underworld. Legend says. The next curse came through Artemis, who was Apollo's sister, and she was the goddess of the moon and hunting. And for some reason, she cursed Ambrosio's skin so that it would burn if he ever touched silver. Poor guy. Artemis then all of a sudden had pity on him, and so she gave him the gift of immortality, which I wouldn't consider such a great gift, but the story speaks of it as a gift. So she gave him that, and she also gave him the speed and strength to become an amazing hunter whose skills were second only to her own. In the origin story, Ambrosio hunts swans and uses their blood as ink to write love poems to his lady, Selene. Wow. Ambrosio, it's said that Ambrosio later moved back to Italy as a full-fledged vampire, and legend traces him back to the city of Florence, where he creates the first vampire clan. Oh no. I am running out of time. I had so much to say about Halloween, but I guess I'm going to have to cut it a little early. But I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Seed, and I would love for you to enjoy your Halloween and be sure to honor the dead spirits who live among us. I am DJ May signing off. Happy Halloween!